So, welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod.
Episode 44.
So we're back. It's been a while.
It has been a while, which I'm sure we'll get into in another episode.
Yes,
but today
we won't cover that today because we've got a very exciting episode today. And I'm absolutely delighted that we've got a wildlife hero, a proper, real wildlife hero on our episode today. A young, passionate conservationist called Reuben Martin, who won the BBC Wildlife Hero Award of 2024. Reuben, welcome. It's fantastic to have you here today.
Hello. It's good to be here.
We've been talking about this for a while, haven't we? Because I think you won the award, was it in June?
It was 4th of June, I think.
And we had a little conversation on Instagram, didn't we? And said, wouldn't it be great for you to come on the episode? And here you are. But it's taken a while because of various things.
Yeah.
Reuben's in the middle of his GCSEs, which is...
I am.
Which makes me feel old.
Makes me feel old. They weren't even GCSEs when I was young. It was O-level, so that tells you how old I am. But, yeah, it's great to have you here, Reuben.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
So, we're just going to chat about you today and the things that you're doing. And really looking forward to it.
Yeah, cool. I think, we've spoken so often on this podcast about how great it is to see people getting out and doing volunteering and citizen science and getting involved in looking after our native wildlife. So to have somebody who literally does this day in and day out, certainly at such a young age as well, it sort of fits our podcast perfectly, really.
Yeah, saying we've got someone who's a young, passionate conservationist makes me very happy to be able to use those three words. So we'll probably
kick it off, Reuben. Just if you'd like to introduce yourself a little bit, who you are, what it is that you do.
So I'm Reuben. I am a reptile surveyor for the Amphibian Reptile Conservation Trust, also known as ARC. I survey 6 nature reserves for reptiles and 2 for amphibians, but it's about to be 8 nature reserves for reptiles.
So you're pretty busy with that then.
Yeah. And we're involved in advising on habitat management for reptiles on these sites with organisations like the South Downs National Park Authority.
It's quite a lot to fit in around GCSEs, to be honest.
It is a lot to fit in, but I love doing it all.
So how did you get into this? And how long have you been doing this? Is this from a very young age?
Well, I started doing this official surveying with ARC 2-3 years ago, but ever since I was like 2 years old, I used to like be into wildlife. I used to just go around lifting stuff up all the time.
You're the child that's been pulling earthworms out of the soil and doing all of that stuff.
Yeah, I used to be told off for picking up bees when I was about 2 years old. Don't pick up the bees anymore.
Out
of interest then, what was it that meant you or led you down the road of reptiles and amphibians? Why was it sort of them that sort of piqued your interest?
In my garden growing up, we had a small pond which had frogs and toads turn up to it. So every spring I'd love when I was younger watching the frog spawn develop and then watching the tadpoles turn into little froglets hopping around. That was very exciting. We also have a non-native species of lizard on where we live called the wall lizard.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. Well,
obviously it's non-native, but it's still very cool to see. And I can see why it would sort of spark a passion for the reptiles.
Yeah, I used to be very into spotting them in my garden.
Yeah, something I can definitely relate to. I mean, growing up, we always had ponds full of frog spawns and newts and obviously then frogs. And I think mum and dad as gardeners, we always find toads for me to go and see. And I think, how can you look at a toad and not become fascinated with amphibians and then go down the route of reptiles as well?
Yeah, I've always loved reptiles and amphibians, but growing up it was more so the amphibians because the reptiles were so elusive always and I was more unable to find them.
Yeah, I think obviously we've done an episode on a couple of reptiles, being like smooth snake and adders, and it's always surprising to me how few people sort of know that they're out there or have seen one, but I think it's a little bit biased because we tend to go looking for them.
Well, I think I mentioned that I haven't seen an adder since I was a child because obviously I don't actively go out looking for them because I'm big into the bird photography, but I haven't seen an adder since I was 6, and I'm not going to tell you how long ago that was.
So when did you end up finding your first adder?
My first adder was in, I think, August of 2022, and it was a nature reserve which we go to very often. It was local, and I was really into reptiles at this point. I was already a member of ARC. I'd helped at a couple of their educational events, and I saw something out of the corner of my eye that looked like an adder. I looked down and it was a bit of plant. I was like, oh no. But then I looked next to it. Oh my God, there's a female adder there.
Oh, that's exciting.
It was very exciting. We went back three times that day.
I'm not surprised. And I think we've spoken briefly before the podcast. It just doesn't get old, finding an adder. Really doesn't.
Yeah.
It's always exciting.
And how big a... Obviously, I see on your YouTube videos that your dad's pretty involved in the stuff that you do. Is he?
Yeah.
And I had a little chat before the podcast, and he mentioned that he'd kept snakes when he was younger and stuff like that. So how big an influence has your dad been on your passion for wildlife? And
he's been a big influence. I mean, he's been on every single survey, I'm pretty sure, except maybe one where he was busy. But yeah, he's just as into it as I am, and it's always been great. He used to take me out when I was little to find wildlife. So yeah.
It's great to see, because it kind of resonates with us, doesn't it,
Matt? Yeah.
I remember, you know, putting a camera in Matthew's hand at the age of 7 to photograph ducks down.
Yeah,
a lot
of time photographing birds.
And we've been doing that a lot, haven't we? Well, all of your life now, really.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, I went on to do zoology and study animals, and a lot of that interest came from, I say, mum and dad both being gardeners and finding me spiders and toads and newts and things like that. So I think it does often start, if you have a parent who's interested in the animals, it does help, apart from spending every birthday at Marwell Zoo as well.
Yeah, because your dad, he goes on surveys with you, doesn't he?
So. Yeah, he's always on the reptile surveys with me, and he absolutely loves it.
So apart from your dad, who's obviously a hero, but have you got some wildlife heroes that you've followed and you're
Chris Packham. I've always looked
well,
up to him.
Of course, he's your best mate now, isn't he? Come on.
Yeah, I did meet him. That was great. But yeah, I used to, growing up, I watched these YouTube clips from old spring watch seasons where they would go out and look for reptiles. It was just this channel that posted all the like reptile stuff on spring watch. Yeah. So I used to, you know, re-watch over and over again videos of Chris Packham with, like, grass snakes and adders.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was a big part of getting me into it as well.
And Steve Baxwell, I think, was one of yours, mate.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned, obviously, growing up with Deadly 60 was a huge influence, especially for the sort of channeling the interest down that sort of venomous animal route of, you know, always been a big fan of snakes and spiders and scorpions. And I think Deadly 60 just has to play a role in that, because it's such an exciting thing as a kid to watch somebody out there finding all these animals.
Yeah, I like Steve Baxwell because he's also doing a lot about threatened species and threatened habitats. He's been doing series, not just in the UK, but across the world as well. He did a thing all about snow leopards.
And sharks, I think.
Is another one that he did. So it's I think we've all had people that, you know, have had a big influence. One of my wildlife heroes is Roy Dennis, the man who introduced white-tailed eagles into Scotland and red kites into Somerset and ospreys back into Wales. And so I think anyone who's sort of passionate about wildlife has got these heroes and these people that, you know, mean a lot in there.
Yeah, and introduce them to a whole new world. Like I say, you know, a lot of our British reptiles are very elusive, and without these shows and books and people to sort of introduce that hidden world, lots of people go their whole life without really ever getting to experience it.
The
one thing I was going to backtrack on and ask, because obviously we've spoken about adders, but I was wondering, even not necessarily native, but what would be your sort of favourite species, or like a bucket list species that you'd just absolutely love to see one day?
Right, my favourite reptile in the UK has always been the adder. Just because, you know, they have so many different, like, colour variations. You've got the black and white males, which are just stunning in April. And you've got the golden brown females. You've also got the melanistic ones, which can be, like, dark blue sometimes. But I'd really love to see a natterjack toad in the wild as well, because I've never seen one in the wild.
Yeah, I haven't either. It's another species I'd love to see.
We did an episode on the natterjack toad.
Yeah, because they are beautiful and just, like I say, quite a rare sight. So it's a nice thing to be able to tick off.
I can't remember where you see those. Are they geographical limitations as far as where you can see them?
Oh, I feel like I should know this. We did a whole episode.
Yeah, we did
it.
A whole episode, didn't we? I think it was going back a bit now.
It was a while there actually.
We did it on episode 23, so it was 20 odd episodes ago.
I can't remember their geographical distribution. And while we're on species and reptiles in general, actually, the question I added to this sort of episode that I wanted to ask you is if there was something that you wish people knew about reptiles and amphibians, what would it, whether it's a cool fact or just something you wish people knew about our reptiles, or not necessarily our ones, but...
Well, the main thing that I wish everyone knew, and I feel like a lot of people don't know, is that all of the reptiles and amphibians we have in the UK are very timid creatures. Despite the adder being venomous, like, the chances of being bitten by an adder are so low. And we see hundreds. We've never been struck out by one. We get quite close to some of them, which I wouldn't recommend. It's always because we lift up a piece of refugia and one's under there. We've never had one strike at us, but we've seen them strike at, like, peacock butterflies and stuff, which is pretty cool to see. But, yeah, they're very peaceful.
Yeah, I think they typically just want to avoid people, don't they?
And... yeah, they never want... they do not... the striking is an absolute last resort, and they'll only do it if they feel like they literally cannot go anywhere.
Yeah.
I think there's a real misconception about adders as well. People are scared of them. They think they're immediately going to bite you, and I think it's a real misconception, isn't it? And
yeah.
So there's this whole stigma around... snakes, I think, particularly adders, which make people, you know, wrongly think that they're bad creatures, and they're not. They're incredible. Yeah, and like you say, they're so timid.
Yeah, as long as you respect them, they'll never strike at you unless you literally tread on them, try and pick them up, or you, like, corner them and they can't go anywhere.
Yeah, obviously, you mentioned, as we were talking earlier, about dogs sometimes get bitten, and I can understand a dog will go and actually have a go.
And they'll stick their nose into, you know, hidey places that got an adder sort of tucked away. Mm-hmm. But in general, yeah, like you say, they're timid and, as you've already said, elusive. So unless people are really looking for them, you would think the encounter that might then lead to a bite is actually going to be quite rare anyway.
Yeah, you very rarely come across them by accident. We go looking for them, and even we still find it hard to find them on particular sites as well. But you won't normally come across an adder by accident unless it is the breeding season when the males are tracking around looking for females. But even that time, they don't normally really notice you. They've only got one thing on their mind at that time.
Have you seen that courting ritual? Because I remember YOLO...
YOLO, fighting?
No, the courting, when the male and the female are doing their little dance. Because I remember seeing a film that YOLO did up in Anglesey, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he had this lovely film of a male and a female doing their little courting ritual, and I didn't know whether you'd actually ever seen that
Yeah,
before.
we've seen... on the same day, we saw two males doing the adder's dance, some people call it, where they fight for the female nearby. And then later that day, we returned to the same spot and saw the winning male breeding with the female.
Oh, okay. God, that's a good day, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a good day.
Like you say, obviously, we're people that go out looking for them. But at the same time, Josh, who's obviously been on the podcast, we've had days where we've had friends come along who want to see an adder, and we'll take them to spots that we're like, 100% guaranteed you'll see an adder. And we've been out all day and not seen them. So to be able to see two of those sort of rare events, the males fighting and an actual breeding event in one day is good going.
Yeah, we've seen the males fighting quite a few times, actually. We saw it twice in one day earlier this year.
God, I see again, not something I've ever seen.
One of them, it was about 2 meters up a like a bush. It was really quite weird.
It's quite a precarious place to have a wrestling match, really.
Yeah, they were just trying to, because they try and get above each other to assert dominance, and they just kept going up, and they didn't. Yeah, then they suddenly realised, oh no, we're up a bush, what are we doing?
Just got a bit out of hand.
Then
really.
They suddenly came down and then resumed their fight. But yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, that does sound like an incredible, incredible thing to see.
And you often also are looking for sand lizards and stuff like that. Have you seen those?
Yeah, so we don't have sand lizards on any of the sites we survey officially, but I have seen a few. When we went to RSP Beyond to film Springwatch, the day after we filmed, because they put us up in a hotel for the night because it was quite late and we weren't going to get home in time to go back to school the next day.
BBC can afford it. So.
Yeah. So we had the whole day to just explore around the area, which is a great area, RSP Beyond, and we went looking for sand lizards. We saw a nice female on the beach area.
Yes, I've been there actually, because I went down to RSP Beyond specifically just to see ospreys, so which we did see. Because, fun enough, we were on that little bit of beach and there's a bit of woodland behind it. And as we were walking along that beach, they'd released some pigs into the woodland, and suddenly these pigs appeared and snuffling around. And so that was quite fun. But there's that bank there, isn't there? Because there's a sign that's saying, please, you know, sand lizards, keep off. And And on your little video with Chris Packham, you went looking for them after that, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we saw a nice female one just walking along.
I've never seen sandals.
I think they're an exciting sight because they're so brightly coloured that I think, again, we're not spoiled as far as reptiles go in the UK. We don't see them day in and day out. It's not like when you're on holiday and you get geckos on the wall. So then when you do see a really bright lizard at the beach, suddenly it feels like you're somewhere quite tropical. It's quite an exciting event.
So I'd like to move on now to talking about the kind of work that you do, because you obviously do a lot of surveying and you obviously do a lot of habitat management. And I guess that's when you're doing that, habitat management at this time of year, and because there's probably not a lot of adders around at the moment.
Yeah.
In the summer, you're obviously surveying. And who are you surveying for? You're surveying for ARC.
So, yeah, we're surveying for ARC, which is the Amphibian Reptile Conservation Trust. We do six sites at the moment for reptiles, two for amphibians. With the reptile sites, you do a minimum of six surveys per year for each site. And the amphibian ones, you do a minimum of four per year. And the survey season ranges from March to July.
Yeah.
And then you have a break in August because it gets a bit too hot for the reptiles. But then September to October is when it starts again.
Okay. And that data that you're obviously producing, what happens to that data? Is that uploaded onto ARC site or?
Yeah, so we have to fill in a form while we're surveying. Yeah. So we record everything, like the weather, the temperature, what time we saw
cloud cover. Comprehensive,
It's very detailed, and we send it all back to ARC so they can just learn patterns and trends within the species so they can learn more about them.
It's so important. We talk so many times about that citizen science and that data, don't we?
A lot about the importance of data and how a lack of data is often a real hurdle for conservation projects. If an organisation can say that we've got a really healthy population here, the population over there is struggling, okay, let's focus our conservation efforts over here, or let's find a way to connect those two habitats or things like that. But they can't do that if they don't know where the species are. And again, you can look at a healthy population, look at the weather, the habitat, everything that you record, and be like, okay, what is it about this spot that's working so well? Can we replicate it somewhere else? You can look at a population that's struggling and be like, okay, what's around the area? What's going wrong? What do we need to change? But again, nothing can be done if you don't actually know where they are or how they're doing.
Those six sites that you're surveying, are they connected sites or are they in different locations?
Most of them are spread across the South Downs.
Oh, okay.
So they're not like connected as in adders could, or like reptiles in general could travel between them, but a lot of them are pretty close by, in West Sussex, all of them. But one of them is particularly far away, which is a private site, which is it's our only heathland site.
Right.
But most of them are chalk downlands. They've got south-facing banks on them, which is great for reptiles. And ARC have actually been surprised by a lot of our numbers that we get on one of our
sites. I've seen a few of your YouTube videos where you've sort of found, six under under a bit of corrugated metal. And
what
they call refugias.
Yeah, refugia being the laid down bits of habitat.
I was surprised by the numbers that you'd found as well. So
yeah, we had 40 in one day, 40 adders.
That's incredible, isn't it? Because we've talked a lot about, obviously they're very threatened species, as most of our native reptiles are. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that there's such a problem with the decline in adder populations and obviously the other reptiles and amphibians as well?
I feel like fragmentation has a big part in it, because populations, even if you've got such a big population like we do on one of our sites in particular, it's not connected to any other sites, so they're stuck there.
Yeah, we talk about fragmented habitats.
Yeah, it's a very frequent topic on the podcast.
And of course it's interesting for us because you're seeing this, you're right there in the field seeing these changes and the changes to habitat. Do you think increasing predation as well is having an effect?
I mean, it's hard to say because I haven't been surveying for that long to see big population increases or decreases. But one of our sites, there's a few pheasants walking around.
Yeah.
And at that site, we've found grass snakes with, you can see where they've been bitten at by pheasants, which is not good.
Yeah, they do have an impact. Again, we've talked about these things, about them releasing pheasants into the countryside, primarily for game shooting, and that does have a huge effect on reptile and amphibian populations on those habitats. So, but I think also from predation, the increase in predation has had a big impact on many things. I see it from ground nesting bird populations, which the increase in crows and
foxes was another
in particular,
one, isn't it?
Has had a huge impact. And that increase in predation is often as a result of changes in land use and intense agricultural practices have changed land uses and created conditions where those predators have thrived. Crow populations in particular are escalating quite remarkably, actually, which is having a big effect because they predate eggs. And so there are all these factors.
Beyond your surveying work, obviously I know you're involved in habitat management, so you're out there trying to improve these habitats that the reptiles rely so heavily on, and what does that work look like?
Well, we often advise on the habitat management on some of our sites. That could be, you know, saying, oh, this area might be better if we had a more gradual slope from a hedgerow down instead of being cut right up to the edge, because you know, when it's cut right up to the edge, if the adders were to emerge in like February, just get picked off by birds of prey.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good way of trying to mitigate this predation issue.
Yeah, and like from our survey results, we can, you know, map where there's a lot of reptiles in a certain spot or like hibernation areas. So we can say to the land managers, you know, maybe do a bit more sensitive management in that area.
Okay, so again, really, really valuable, especially if you're able to work with the landowners and land managers,
because
they're the ones who can impact the productivity of the land day in and day out by what it is that they choose to do on it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Again, I've seen some of your YouTube videos of you working hard in the field. So
yeah, we do some habitat management as well.
So, but you've also, I've got a little note here when we were talking about this little agenda for today's podcast about sometimes some of your friends come along and you've got a few funny stories of things that have happened with your friends who come along and help you survey.
I've got a few of those. I've got two friends who come on most of my surveys, Sam and Huey. I want to give a shout out to them because they're great. They help a lot. You know, it's hard to do all the jobs on a survey because we need someone filling in the form, people looking, someone using a stick to lift the mats because you don't want to accidentally get our fingers bitten by an adder.
Yeah. Nice work, boys, by the way.
Yeah. but yeah, they come on all the surveys pretty much whenever they can. And sometimes, because, you know, we're out in nature, if we finish the survey and we have time, we may as well just go for a little bit of an explore. And it often ends up in one of them falling in a bush or something. But one in particular day was pretty funny because we walked into this forest on the edge of one of our sites and we found this abandoned rope bridge.
Oh, that sounds dodgy straight away.
Yeah, it was like, it was just ropes being held up by a tree that had fallen down.
Right.
And these wooden panels, which some of them were missing and some of them were hanging vertically down into a river below. Sam and Hugh thought it was a good idea to climb on the bridge.
They didn't.
And then,
don't tell me they didn't.
Sam was doing some tricks on it or something. I don't know. He was just messing around. Then suddenly, uh-oh! And I see him dangling, just holding, and his legs are dipping into the river. He's like, help! And then his wellies, because he was wearing wellies, they filled up with water from the river, so he couldn't pull himself up, and we couldn't pull him up. And he was like, I have to drop. And then he suddenly went, no, and then vanished into the river.
So he got a good soaking.
Did you ever see him again? That's the real question.
we did rescue him. He climbed to the edge, but it was cold because it was like early spring.
So he's not still just floating down that river?
No, he is still with us.
That is good.
So he had to spend the rest of the day absolutely soaked through?
Yeah, he had to walk back to the van he was absolutely soaked. He was freezing.
And of course you just laughed.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Honestly. And you probably hadn't stopped, you know, taking a bicky out of him about that.
Yeah, no, it's on YouTube.
It's
pretty funny.
Oh, is it? I've missed that. I'm going to have to watch
the thing about these things nowadays, isn't it? That's out there forever.
You can't get away with it at all. No. Can you? So it's on some kind of social media platform.
Yeah, it's a great video.
Sounds like a good day, though. Reptile surveying,
rope
bridge, mate in a river.
Yeah.
Can't really ask for too much more, can you?
Absolutely, that's great. Great that they're coming out with you, though.
Obviously, they're
supporting you to do the work that you're doing. So I think that also is really heartwarming to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really into it. They both love it.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay. I think we've already talked about what happened to the survey results and the threats. So, right, so obviously you're famous now, and you were on Springwatch. That was an amazing experience, I should think. And by the look of your face when you got the award, a big surprise.
Yeah, it was a big big surprise. It was a really great experience, the whole thing. But, it all started because my dad was watching Winter Watch and they announced the awards. He was like, I'll just sign up Ruben just in case something happens.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah, and then while we were on a survey, actually, we got an email saying Ruben has been selected as a finalist.
Wow. And how was the day? Because then you got... What happened from that point on? Then you got invited to go for the day, for the filming.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a full day there? Was it a lot of filming? Was it? Because we don't really, we just see the little... on Springwatch, it was probably, 10 minutes or so on the actual programme itself. But that, behind the scenes, probably was a huge amount of work, I guess.
So the bit on Springwatch where they told... Where my dad told me that I won, that was... at one of our sites, and I was told that they were filming all the finalists like that.
Oh, okay.
And so when he told me, that was my genuine reaction, and I was like,
it was genuine surprise.
Yeah, I was very excited, and didn't know how to react, but yeah, that was a great day.
Hard to react as well when you're on camera.
But yeah, that was amazing, and then we got invited to go down to Springwatch to get the award, and that day was just... incredible. The whole day, all the crew were like amazing.
It looked like a lot of gear down there. I mean, there was a huge amount of fans.
Yeah, we got a tour. It was really cool.
You went in where all the wildlife camera screens
were. All the trucks with all the cameras. It was just like the best day ever. We got a tour around. We got to see like how it was all like powered with hydrogen.
Wow,
which is pretty cool.
But that was also your first sort of experience being on camera. So it's really 0 to 100 of not being on camera and straight onto BBC Springwatch. So what was that like, being sort of thrust into the limelight of being on TV?
I was just caught up in the excitement of it all. I absolutely loved every second of being there. It was just great. It was just one of the coolest like environments I've ever been in.
It is an amazing reserve, because I went down there first time to see ospreys and I was absolutely blown away. And nice thing about RSPBR now, there are lots of different environments, because you've got the woodland, you've got the heathland, you've got the estuary and the salt marshes, so there's a huge amount of varying habitat down there, which is so fantastic to walk around.
So you
spent some time down there.
Yeah, we spent some time down there. We saw some cool wildlife, the whole Springwatch, because we were there for 2 days, because they put us up in a hotel. The first day was just, like, insane, because I got to meet, Chris Packham, who I mentioned earlier, as one of my wildlife heroes. Yeah. Michaela, I just got to meet, most of the crew. And
YOLO, you met YOLO as well.
I met YOLO on the second day at breakfast in the hotel.
Oh, right.
And... I saw him sitting there. I was like, oh my God. And then I was trying to eat my breakfast really quickly so that I could talk to him. And I put in and he went, Ruben. But I just put a massive mouthful of breakfast in my mouth. And I was like, oh no. So then he walked over and I was just trying to swallow this food desperately. I was like, oh no. He's come over and he was like, I'll let you eat. I was like, no. But he came back a minute later and we had a nice chat with him.
He's such a friendly guy.
He was really lovely.
Actually, we went to WWT Wellney up in Norfolk. We were walking around there and YOLO was doing some kind of wildlife talk and tour and taking people around Wellney, and we bumped into him. He was so friendly. And he was really, really lovely.
He came up to Bangor University to give a talk at the Zoology Society, and he seemed massive
fan of YOLO. He's such a nice guy.
But I mean, you've spoken about how amazing RSPBR is, but I can't imagine how cool it is to experience that whilst Springwatch is going on.
Yeah.
You've got just full of wildlife enthusiasts, camera gear, all of it in one big go.
Yeah, it was just an awesome day. It was just incredible, especially, the circumstances under which it was, because I was, with Chris Packham, all my heroes, and We actually got to watch the show go out live from the control room.
Wow.
Which was pretty cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah, with the director, and they were all... It looked incredibly complicated. They had, like, about 1,000 buttons on a big desk.
Yeah. I think I'd say I saw your video, and there seemed to be millions of miles of cables and God knows what going everywhere around that, where all the setup was. And so it looks like a big operation to film that.
Yeah, it is extremely cool in there.
So afterwards, when you got back, did you get a round of applause when you walked into school the next day? I mean, did everybody go, "Whoa, it's Ruben, he's famous"?
I don't think many people in my school really knew about it. But actually, the day after Spring Watch, because we were in that area and they put us up in a hotel, so we just got to explore for the day. And I kept getting recognised by just random people, which was quite strange, but it's pretty cool.
You have to deal with fame, it's not easy, mate.
That must be a strange experience, though, just, out there exploring, seeing wildlife. Yeah. People go, "Oh, I think I see you on TV last night."
That's Ruben Martin.
Yeah. It was quite strange, but it was a very cool day. We just got to spend the whole day in nature in that area, which is great. Went up to Corfe Castle to see the peregrines as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
Which is very cool.
They did some amazing film on the peregrines at Corfe, didn't they? Because they showed some pretty brutal footage of the male. Was it the male or was it the female that took one of the young? One of them did. One of them ate their own young. So there was some pretty brutal film footage of that, but incredible footage, actually, of the behaviour. So
obviously we saw the clip on Spring Watch of you meeting Chris Packham and him presenting you your award, and I think at the time you were looking for the sand lizard, and you mentioned you had a little bit of a tour, but did you get to do anything with the crew wildlife wise that we didn't necessarily see on TV?
I mean, the whole day I was kind of just around the set of the show. I didn't really do much exploring around on the first day. That was more the second day, and that was just me and my dad. Okay. They're all very busy.
Yeah.
But we did have a few good chats with Chris and Michaela just around the set. He came up to us while we were eating lunch afterwards, Chris, and he showed me a video that he had of a golden eagle eating an adder, which was pretty...
Wow.
I mean, it was amazing. Pretty brutal, but it was, cool behaviour to see.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that just sounds like a life-changing experience.
It was.
Has it made you want to be a wildlife presenter? Because you're very eloquent on your YouTube videos. You speak so nicely and really interesting to listen to. So
you
make a really good Chris Packham 2. Well, Ruben Martin 1. But you know what I mean? You make a good presenter. Does it give you anything, actually, I could do that?
I mean, it would be extremely cool one day. I mean... I definitely just in the future want to do something with nature, reptiles.
That is something on my list here of your ambitions and going forward from here. And like I say, that's why I wondered whether, wildlife presenter, I could do that. So have you got any other plans in that? I know you're middle of GCSEs and there's still a long way to go as, forging a career in something, but I guess it's going to be in conservation in some way.
That's what I'm hoping for. Yeah, I mean, I just want to help in whatever way I can with our native wildlife, particularly the reptiles and adders as well, because I feel like they're a bit underrepresented.
Yeah, definitely. It's a difficult area to get into, which you know full well, don't you? Because conservation. I mean, because you've got friends that have been into it, something that you were thinking about going into, and of course you're now doing a Rivers Trust but it's a hard thing to get into, but there are more and more now opportunities, I think, for conservation work and careers.
I mean, obviously lots of my friends have gone on to be ecologists, and that is their career that they've chosen and went on from their zoology degree to do. Some of the challenges, as I'm sure Rupin knows, if you're interested in things like reptiles, it's quite seasonal. You can find quite a lot of work over the sort of spring, summer, but come winter, the work can disappear. So trying to find the sort of full-time surveying can sometimes be challenging. But I've got a lot of friends who are ecologists, and in winter they survey different things, or they go out and do the habitat management. And I've got friends who work as ecologists for consultancies. I've got friends who work as ecologists for local councils or the Wildlife Trust and things like that. So the opportunities are definitely there. And I mean, there's all sorts, from, you know, surveying bats in people's gardens to going out and doing reptile stuff. So, yeah, there's lots of opportunities.
So, so you've got ambitions in that direction. Have you thought any, you know, sort of where you really want to be, or is it a bit, is it a bit too soon at the moment?
I feel like, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure of the exact details of what I want to do when I'm older. Just something with reptiles is the idea.
Yeah, fantastic. Your generation, Ruben, that's going to be very instrumental in trying to save wildlife, particularly the native wildlife, and protect the habitats.
And to be fair, I think now is a good time to be really getting into it, because we are seeing, and we've spoken about it before, things like you know, building developments have to take into consideration swifts and bats and reptiles and stuff, and so they're going to need the people who are knowledgeable about the habitat management and able to come and survey sites and whatnot. So at a time where hopefully nature is gaining a bit more of a voice, there's going to be a real need for people with that experience, knowledge, and passion.
I think you're right, and I think there is a real change in people's perception of protecting wildlife and thinking about it, because there are a lot of, now I see it, you know, when I'm going out and doing bird counting and stuff like that, local people are getting very passionate about protecting their local areas and their local green spaces. And so it is a good time, Ruben. I think you'll find opportunities, and I think that movement and that awareness of habitat protection and wildlife protection is growing, and so you're at a good time to do it, and we need your generation to get really into it. This is why having you here today is so heartwarming for me, because we've got a passionate young conservationist that wants to make a difference, and we talk about trying to make a difference.
It's even,
however small that may be.
Yeah, I think it's even, you know, doing what you do over on YouTube, for example, and just showcasing our native reptiles. And just before we sort of move on, I was interested to know sort of how you got into the YouTube side of things. Like, was that something that was always on your mind, or was it just something that sort of happened?
I think I just sort of got some good footage on my... It probably wasn't that good, but I thought it was good at the time. Footage of adders from our surveys just on my phone. I was like, I'm just going to put them together and put it on YouTube. And then it just grew from there.
Yeah, because they're brilliantly put together, your videos. Really good watch. And obviously, we've spoken about your narration, things like that, but they're really engaging. And it's just lovely to see you and your friends out there sort of looking after
them. And your dad, of course, because he likes quite a lot of them, which I think is great. So, yeah, because it's not that easy to put a good quality YouTube video out. Lots of people will just do something on their phone and put it up, and it's really poor. Yours are really good quality.
Yeah, they do take quite a while to make.
I don't think people realise just how hard it is to put out a really good video. You know, a quality video.
Is the sort of video production side, you know, the filming, the editing, the narrating, something that you really enjoy about it?
Yeah, I quite like doing it all. I mean, it does take up a lot of time, so I don't upload as much as I did like earlier in the year because, you know, I'm in my GCSE.
Yeah,
year
got a lot going on.
Yeah, sort of about one video a month is pretty good at the moment. I like doing it. When we're out, I'm always just filming stuff, you know, because you see a lot of cool reptile stuff and just other wildlife. And yeah, there's a few funny moments with my friends often.
Well, it's certainly a great way to... you know, to create awareness amongst people about just how cool adders are.
Yeah.
So it's don't stop doing that, because it's really important that people see that just how important it is to be protecting them. So going on from that, we always on our little podcast, you know, we talk about the threats and the problems that the wildlife or the habitat is having, and we always like to then go into positive news. We also like to talk about organisations that are working hard, people like yourself that are working hard to protect the species or the habitat. And so there's a few on here. I'd like to go into the positive news. If you've got some nice positive news stories about, you know, where you've seen the populations of reptiles increase, or organisations that are doing great things. I know you do some work with the Stenning Downland Scheme, obviously ARC, which is a... If people haven't been on the ARC website, I thoroughly recommend. They've got some fantastic resources on there. Brilliant website. But Stenning Downland Scheme, that's an interesting one, because that seems to be a little bit of a smaller project.
Yeah, it's so I think I'm I'm pretty sure this is right, but the Whiston estate, which is a big estate, they gave it to the village of Stenning for the community and for wildlife. And they're really great. They've got a team of like something like 100 volunteers.
Yeah, I was looking on the website this morning actually just to get a little bit of info. It looks a great team of volunteers.
Yeah, yeah, it's really great.
And very friendly as well. It looks like a very friendly little site and project. So that's great. So what do you do with them?
Well, it's similar to all our other sites that we survey. We give, guidance on habitat management.
Yeah.
And we work with the rangers and the volunteers and, they're all great.
I should imagine, like most of these charities, because it's a charity, I guess, hard to get the funding and because the funding is so crucial. So
that's why it's always great to see a big team of volunteers. Yeah. So there are that many people who are interested to come out and help.
Yeah.
It's so vital to those sorts of projects. How long have you been doing that?
The ESDS?
Yeah.
That only started this year.
Oh, okay, so that's a recent project.
Yes, we've had one full year of surveying there.
Oh, that's brilliant. Have you got adders and...
We've got all four of the more widespread species, so adders, grass snakes, common lizards and slow worms.
Oh, fantastic. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's good, because it's not a massive site, is it?
No,
I think it's about 170 hectares. I don't know what a hectare
is. Yeah, I can't even
picture
how big
what is a hectare? I think it's about 170 hectares I read on the site today, and I have no concept of how... large an area. That didn't look a huge area, but
it's a great little site, and they've actually got the area on the site where we find the most reptiles by far was a completely, it was just a farm field with no biodiversity whatsoever, but rewilded it.
Fantastic.
And now it is got a lot of adders, few grass snakes, a lot of common lizards and a lot of slow worms.
It just goes to show, doesn't it, how quick nature will repair the damage. And...
Yeah, I think it was literally about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, rewilded it.
I love stories like that. I love stories about rewilding where they just let nature take over and how quickly the wildlife comes back in.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So that's really encouraging, isn't it, to see that kind of environment.
Yeah.
Improve like that. So that's great. So any other good news stories that you've got that you can highlight today?
Well, I've just got, all the organisations that we work with are all great. South Downs National Park Authority, the Whiston Estate, the NEP we've been involved with recently because we're setting up a survey there.
Amazing.
We had a meeting
rewilding
with them.
Project, yeah.
Yeah, they're absolutely great. I love everything they're doing.
Surveying the NEP will be good fun.
I've only
been there once and it was absolutely boiling. We didn't have a great day for reptiles. I think it was too hot, but I had a fantastic day for insects and saw all sorts of dragonflies. And I think we also saw purple emperor butterflies as well, which was incredible. But to actually go out and survey, what a place to do it.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to survey there because I know that there's grass snakes there, but it's kind of like people have spoken about like maybe these people have like reportedly seen a couple of adders there.
Oh, okay,
but they don't like
official survey results.
No, there's no like yes, there's like a big population here. There's like people have said they've seen one maybe. So it'd be interesting to see if they like kind of turn up there.
Yeah, be really cool if you end up being sort of part of the first team to get nice photographic evidence and proper survey results.
Yeah.
Be like, yes, we have adders on
the
map.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, and there's, I was looking, doing a bit of research on this. There's been lots of really good projects in the New Forest Species Survival Fund, Saving Scotland's Amphibians and Reptiles, loads of projects going on, Snakes in the Heather, Back from the Brink, of course, did a lot of work on restoring habitat for reptiles.
I also happened to find some good news for this month
great.
Was cool.
Yeah.
It turns out literally kicking off in December 2024, Dorset Council are about to start a restoration project of a £1.2 million restoration project at Avon Heath Country Park, which is essentially what they're doing. It's going to take 2 years and they're trying to restore and protect the lowland heath, which obviously we spoke about a lot, especially for reptiles. And it's one of those parts of Heathland that got planted quite heavily with non-native pine for the timber industry. And I think people can almost see the idea of cutting down trees in the middle of climate change as a bad thing, but you need to remove the trees and the sunlight can hit
non-native trees. Yeah,
can hit sort of the lowland heather plants. And so in doing that, to be fair, all of the timber that they cut down is going to be used in local projects, so it's not going to waste. But over 2 years, they are trying to remove the invasive pine from a 210-hectare site to protect the lowland heath, but that kicks off this month, which
fantastic.
I thought brings some great, really up-to-date positive news, which is just nice to see happening.
And there are quite a few projects. The Heathlands Reunited Project, which is led by the South Downs National Park Authority, which is aiming to restore, reconnect and recreate heathland to cover an area greater than 1,200 football pitches. So it's that trying to reconnect those heathlands, which is so important for the adder population. And hopefully these projects take off and develop and mature, that you in particular will see adder populations increase. And that's what we're obviously hoping, not just adder, but all of our native reptiles, of course. And so is there anything else that you've...
One organisation, the Wheel to Waves Project.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've heard of it, but
it's... No, I haven't, actually.
We've been involved with it in training volunteers to survey a few sites, but basically what it is a big wildlife corridor that goes from the Weald to the sea with the waves, basically.
Oh, that's great.
I'm not sure the exact route it takes, but it's a great organisation. They're working hard to connect up as many sites as possible. Yeah. And they're really considering reptiles and all of it, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. I'm a big fan of a wildlife corridor. I mean, it's such an efficient way of trying to connect fragmented habitats. But it's great to hear that they're taking reptiles into consideration. Because I think, I can't remember whether it was off the podcast or part of this conversation, you've mentioned that one of the things about reptiles and amphibians, they're easily overlooked, and so sometimes these habitat restoration projects don't necessarily have the reptiles high up on their list.
If no one's surveying for reptiles, then often you won't even know they're there because they're so secretive.
Yeah.
So it's important to have surveyors on, you know, as many sites as you can, especially if you're trying to manage it for wildlife, because if you find, for example, that there's adders there, you might want to manage it in a different way to if they weren't there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why your work is so important.
Yeah, it really does highlight how essential surveyors and that data really is.
Just going back to Chris Packham, I was interested to know, obviously he does quite a lot of campaigning. Have you ever been on any of his campaigns? Yeah, marching in London and stuff like that. Is that your thing?
So, the big march in London that happened?
Yeah.
We couldn't go because my dad had COVID.
Oh, no.
We would have gone.
Were you?
Yeah. I mean, we would have definitely gone. That was a shame. But I watched it live on YouTube and it was really cool.
Yeah.
Was that the Restore Nature Now one back in the summer? Yeah.
Because they did one for the rivers as well.
Well, they did the March for Clean Water somewhat recently. Yeah, because I was there for that one, but I missed the Restore Nature Now one.
Yeah, so I didn't know whether you might be there, you know, with your banner, Save the Adders, you know, or whatever it may be, walking with Chris. So
I don't have too much experience with stuff like that.
They're really good events, actually. Yeah. They are. They're quite wholesome, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's just nice to see so many people come together. And I think it builds a nice picture when you see a photograph of like the streets of London filled with people who are all there for nature.
I think that's shows how really, important really it encouraging is to see how many everyone. People turned out for those events. The March on London, obviously, there are so many. I think it was 100,000, 200,000. Huge amount of people, wasn't it, that turned up. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about there is an awareness, much more awareness now for people to...
really care about
to care
nature.
And protecting their local spaces and green spaces and wildlife and I think again, you know, that connection with wildlife, people are finding that it's such good therapy being out in nature, and I think that also is a big thing that's going on now. People are going, do you know what, when I need a little bit of a switch off, I'll go and walk on my local nature reserve or through a woodland. And that's becoming a really big thing for mental health.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk about prescribing nature as a thing to do with your, I don't know, like say for mental health and obviously physical health. And I think obviously Ruben and I both share the fact that there's nothing more exciting than finding a snake. But even if you're not into snakes, there's nothing that will, I don't know, give you a little spark of joy, like seeing a bird or, I don't know, a butterfly species you've never seen
or
before.
Or getting eaten alive by ticks.
Yeah, that's it.
Which I think you've had some experience of, haven't you?
Yes. One of our sites in particular, the more heathland-based site, is absolutely infested with ticks.
And you've got to be really careful of getting getting bitten by those.
Yeah. It's an occupational hazard, though, really, isn't it?
Yeah, my friend Huey put his hand in a tick nest in some tiny little short grass, and he suddenly had about like 50 ticks on his hand. He went, ah. Yeah. Had to brush them all off quickly before they spread
out. But I guess that comes with the territory. I guess you get eaten alive by mozzies and, you know, scraps by gorse and all of that stuff. So it just comes with the territory for you, Reuben, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Come out looking battered and eaten.
Yeah, often come out smelling of grass snake.
Oh, now that is a pungent smell.
They squirt something, don't they?
They do, yeah. When they feel threatened, they do spray this... I'm not entirely sure what it is, but it's pretty
musky,
disgusting.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and
so it's a pretty good defense mechanism then.
Yeah, they use their tail to like helicopter it and flick it around at you. It's
really?
Yeah.
And you've had that done to you, have you?
Oh yes.
On numerous occasions.
Yeah, that's normally the sign that if you're handling it, you know, you should put it back. Which we only handle grass snakes when we feel like it, you know, the benefits outweigh, you know, the cost of disturbing it, which is often, you know, to show people, to get them interested, which I feel like is important.
Definitely. Because you were talking also about, you had a thing in here about reptile walks for children and adults. Are you involved in doing things like that?
Yeah, so at SDS, we did a wildlife walk with some children, just to show them around. We were looking for reptiles. It was the one time we didn't get a snake.
It's always the way.
The only time, and I saw the two tails of snakes, but no one else saw them.
Oh, no.
And it was, but yeah,
I think we're going to do some more. That's a really good educational thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
for educating people obviously about the fact that they're beautiful creatures, not to be feared. And
yeah,
I guess that's a big part of it, isn't it? Is to try and educate kids to know that actually they're an incredible animal.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't be fearful of them or, you know, malign them in any way. So that's and I think that education, we talk about education again, as such an important role. So again, you could see yourself doing more of those.
Yeah, I think
what age were the children that you were taking around?
Quite a bit younger than me.
Yeah,
sort of. I don't know, but yeah, they were definitely younger than me, but they were really, really interested.
Yeah, again, that fuels the passion.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, we've spoken, both of us, you know, you start from a young age with people introducing it to you, and then that leads to people like Reuben, like yourself, who goes off to do the surveying, but that won't happen if you don't spark the interest. So it's really important to make sure, even though, you know, you are the younger generation, even younger generation are just as interested and passionate about our native wildlife.
Yeah, no, that's really good stuff. So is that any more positive news, or are we done on that?
Well, I've got one thing I wanted to add, which is this is actually an ARC thing, which I did not know about, but I just thought it'd be a cool thing to give a shout-out to, because it's very similar to things we talk about anyway. But just saying that you don't necessarily have to go off and be a, you know, full-blown surveyor or contribute to that sort of level of citizen science, because ARC actually do a garden dragon watch, which I thought was really cool. And it essentially just asks people, you can do it multiple times a year. Obviously, you're probably going to want to pick spring, summer to, you know, actually see something, but just to spend 10 minutes in your garden to see what reptiles and amphibians you find, and then you upload the data to their website, and you can go and have a look on their website now. They've got a fantastic map that shows where people have found what species all across the country. And so even taking 10 minutes out of your day to have a little rummage around your garden, if you've got a pond, if you've got a log pile, can you find a frog, a toad, a slow worm, it's probably a good shout, and then upload it, and then you're contributing to this, you know, national citizen science database just in your garden, just like the RSPB Great Garden Bird Watch. But I love these, you know, these initiatives that allow anybody to get involved in something nature, something wildlife, without committing too much time or effort or money, but they can still make a difference just by uploading information in the garden. And we've spoken so many times that even garden data is so important, because it gives a big picture of the population, where they are, where they're not.
Yeah.
And so even if you don't find something, that can be just as important to upload as finding something, because it might show the gaps in the populations and things like that. So
I'm doing a weekly garden feeding survey for BTO. So every week I have to sort of sit and count how many birds are on my feeders and then upload that data. So
so if you want a little taste of reptile and amphibian surveying, which might then lead you to do even more, but get involved in the ARC Garden Dragon Watch, which I mean it's a cracking name for an initiative as well.
So Reuben, I know you're all in the middle of your GCSEs, which I'm sure you'd much rather you weren't. When's your next habitat management, or I bet you can't wait for spring, can you?
To be out I can't wait again. For spring. I love spring.
Yeah, I bet that's a really a lovely time for you where you can get back out. You know that the adders are going to be appearing and the other reptiles will be appearing. So
yeah, I mean, it might be a bit challenging this spring juggling reptile stuff and my GCSEs, but spring is my absolute favourite season. Yeah. I can't wait.
So, yeah, I have exactly the same, because typically my photography lends itself to spiders, insects and things with lots of legs. And over winter, the opportunities to go out just diminish massively. So as soon as spring comes around, we've got all the cool wildlife reappearing. It's just, you can't help but get outside as much as you can.
It's quite interesting, actually, because Matthew and I go out doing photography. He does macro photography with all the invertebrates. I do bird photography. And then various times of the year, there's millions of invertebrates.
Yeah, I'm getting more species in a bush than you will in a day.
And I'm struggling to find a bird to photograph. But this time of year, I've got loads of birds and you've got nothing.
Yeah.
Well, not nothing, but
much
very
less.
Little. So, so you haven't got anything that you're doing now before Christmas? Or?
At the moment, so we're doing our reports for each of our sites of what we found throughout the year to help with habitat management and just, you know, see what the populations are like compared to last year, if it's gone down by a lot, if it's gone up, stuff like that, and helping out with habitat management, just a few sites. And we're also setting up two new transects, so one at the Nepa State and one in a little campsite, which is in the Whiston Estate.
Okay.
With doing sort of doing a bit of the report work now, does that mean you have... like a yearly tally for how many adders and how many things you've seen. Do you know the numbers off the top of your head? If not, we can stick them in the show notes, but I'd love to know how many adders
you've
seen.
I do not know the numbers off the top of my head, but it's quite a lot of adders we see.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating to know. Maybe you can ping down a message on Instagram or something, because I'd love to know how many adders you've seen in 1 year.
I'll see if I can find out.
Yeah, because I'm sure it blows all the numbers I've seen probably completely out the water. I was happy to see sort of 10 or 12 in a day, and you're out there seeing, 40.
I'm going to definitely have to come out with you one day, because I haven't seen an adder since I was a young boy.
Well, I have to say, the thing I've been surprised at is whenever I've gone out looking for adders, it's typically around sort of the New Forest and Dorset area. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I've grown up here near the South Downs, and I've never gone out looking for them in the South Downs. I've only really done it New Forest, Dorset, Devon area.
Yeah.
And yet, it turns out, actually, there must be some good spots almost on my doorstep that I missed growing up. So.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people think of adders as heathland only, pretty much, but they absolutely thrive on chalk downland. And...
Yeah, I didn't know that.
No, I always knew that they were there, but I would never have necessarily put it as, somewhere I could go find lots in a day. And like I say, growing up's not something I saw.
You'll have to come out with this as well.
So obviously I've missed the...
So if you wouldn't mind one day, we'll come and do a...
Yeah,
we'll
come join you.
We'd love to do that.
Yeah. Maybe once your exam's done.
Yeah,
maybe when you're a bit more relaxed, because obviously you've got a lot of work to do.
I'll have a long summer holiday this year.
Full of wildlife.
See if we can organise something, because that would be a fantastic thing to do. Certainly for me, because I have to say, I haven't seen an adder for years and years and years. So that'd be really exciting.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
And I'll also bring my... big lens, so I might see some good...
Yeah, we always find that when we go for a walk, Dad's eyes are always up looking for birds, and my eyes are always down looking for insects, and neither of us are looking forward. Yeah. So we normally walk into things because we're not very good at looking straight. Your eyes are keenly tuned to birds, and I can spot an insect, but we have nobody actually looking where we're going.
No, that is very true.
So. But if we're out with you and you're looking for the reptiles, we've basically got all bases covered there. We won't miss a thing.
Definitely, yeah, that would be really good. Well, I think we might have covered everything.
Yeah, so in that case, Ruben, where can people find you? If you want to, what's the name of your YouTube channel or Instagram, any social media you'd like to give a bit of a plug?
On YouTube and Instagram, I am Ruben's Reptiles.
Perfect. Obviously, we'll stick a link to both in the show notes. So if you haven't already seen Ruben's brilliant YouTube channel and Instagram account, do go give him a look, give him a follow, hit subscribe, and see what it is that he's out there doing.
Yeah, definitely. And it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on our podcast today, Ruben.
Yeah, thank you. It's been really good. It's
been really good to...
Yeah, I feel like we could talk for hours.
I know you've got a family due this afternoon, we're going to have to cut this a little bit short, because we could talk to you all day. So it's been an absolute pleasure, mate.
Yeah, thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Fantastic.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. In that case, we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
And, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah. Bye.